Hi, welcome to the Lob podcast by These Football Times. My name is Omar Salim. I'm the editor of the site and I am your host today. I'm delighted to say that joining me today, we've got ex-player of Liverpool, made over 700 appearances for the club and is now one of the faces of Sky's excellent football coverage. Jamie Carragher, hello.
Hello.
Joining us as well from the US, we've got my co-host today, founder and chairman of Year Zero Soccer. He's done some great things out in the US and is an expert on the Italian game, particularly Italian defending, which is obviously very pertinent today. So hello, Jim Hart.
Hello, Omar. Glad to be on the show. Hello, Jamie.
Hello.
We've also got John Townsend, former player, now coach and writer. He's been with These Football Times for a long time, featured on The Guardian, NSCAA, one of the most influential writers out in the US at the moment. So hello, John.
Hello, Omar. Happy to be on.
Great. And last but not least, one of my heroes, one of the absolute best writers we've got on These Football Times, joining us from Siberia, about as far away and as remote as you could, Andrew Flint. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, Omar. Thanks for having me on.
Great. We are recording this podcast just a couple of hours after the Hillsborough verdicts were released. A lot of us at the site are Liverpool supporters, have been there, have talked about what's happened at Hillsborough, and we featured it on the site. We just want to extend all of our thoughts to the families, everyone that's been campaigning with justice for the 96. It's a huge moment, not just for them, but for British football and for justice as much as anything else. We're delighted for Liverpool as a city as well. I know that it's the sort of thing where everyone has come together in the city and has pulled in one direction. It shows the human side of football, which is absolutely brilliant. So just a couple of words on that. We'll crack on into the podcast now. Obviously, our topic, we've highlighted it quite a lot on social media and on the site itself, is the lost art of defending. Have standards dropped in the game today? To get to the bottom of that, I think it's important to understand what a good defender is, what makes a good defender, certainly in the modern game at the highest level today. So I'll shoot that to Jamie. Jamie, what do you think makes a good defender today?
Well, I think in terms of what we would say makes a good defender today is probably one of the reasons why we're talking about the lost art of defending, because In lots of ways now, we're looking for things from defenders that maybe we weren't looking for so much 20, 30 years ago. And we seem more interested in what defenders are doing with the ball now, in terms of how we judge them. I think that's been the case for a long time with fullbacks. I've always said fullbacks now are judged on how many crosses they put in the box rather than how many they stop. And that's not a criticism. I think that's just the fact the way the game's gone and what we expect from fullbacks. And I think it's become more now with centre-backs as well, how often we see centre-backs taking up full-back position to receive the ball from goalkeepers and splitting, and it's how we judge them now, especially at the top. I think that's probably had a detrimental effect to the defending at times, because it feels as if a lot of defenders are more focused on what they do with the ball. But in terms of what we're looking for, I think you want a defender to tick every box, and that's why we're wanting more from defenders on the ball. But I still go back to, you know, what you want from a defender in terms of defensive side. I mean, I always think reading the game and smelling danger is the most important thing. And I go back to, you know, probably your favourite player in that position, Baresi. I think he's a master at that. You go back to probably the most famous Englishman, Bobby Moore, not the biggest centre-back you've ever seen, but read the situation, read danger, and was always there before things happen. So I think those values that we had a long time ago are still there today, but I think we expect a lot more from them in terms of possession.
John, you've been out in the US, you've been close to MLS. The one thing that I noticed when I was working out there is that the standard of defending is a lot lower than what it is in Europe. And I think that's perhaps one of the key reasons why the game over there hasn't developed. Give us your thoughts on the standard of defending in MLS and what you also think makes a good defender at the top level.
Yeah, I agree with so much of what Jamie said. I think in MLS, it's the structure of the league and the level of coaching isn't yet at the top level. So you have a less emphasis on tactics based on some of the defensive principles. I think as a discipline, it's not seen as a discipline. It's seen as a necessity in so many ways. I think You've got players coming from a collegiate system, going from a 3-month season to a 9-10 month season for the first time, and you have a league that pays a lot of money for attacking players and going up against defenders that are making the league minimum. And so from a purely a defending principle standpoint, it's still a league that has yet to have an identity with how it wants to set defenders up. It's kick and run in a lot of ways. It's improving, but you're going to see David Villa go up against a player who's 22 playing his first professional season, which is, again, another structural issue with U.S. soccer, if that makes sense, Omar.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. I think that Jamie touched on Franco Baresi just then. I remember being a kid watching Baresi. For me, he was the smartest defender I've ever seen. But I think people talk about Maldini now as being one of the smartest defenders they've ever seen. But I think Baresi was the one that came first. With that in mind, obviously in that era, you had people like Baresi and Maldini came afterwards. And over the last sort of 10, 15 years, you had people like Stam and Vidic and Ferdinand and Maldini and Puyol and Hiera, all these top defenders. Andrew, do you think that there is a lack of world-class talent in defence at the upper end of the game? Because if you look at the game now, a lot of people are saying it's as much about the talent than anything else. That Jamie's 100% spot on in terms of what we expect from defenders. But as much as that, the quality of the players has diminished. What are your thoughts on that, Andrew?
Well, I think it's defining what the defender is that has changed the goalpost, how we judge what a good defender is. I mean, I'm glad Jamie highlighted the reading of the game, because it makes, centre-backs like me feel better. I've got the pace of a snail, but at least I like to think I can see what's going on in front of me, So, when Rio Ferdinand signed for Manchester United for what was, I believe, a world record fee for a defender, nobody really complained at the time because, in my opinion, the sort of player he is. He is a big lad, of course he is, but I think players like Rio he kick-started a trend almost where people felt like they had to appreciate the ball-playing centre-back. And I think that just depends on what team or system the defender fits into. Would you say is there a lack of defenders of the caliber of Rio? It depends if you're talking about the same type of defender. So to answer your question, I would say there is a shortage of the same type of defenders, but whether that's a bad thing, I don't think it is. I think there are all sorts of systems. So I don't think there is a shortage of world-class defenders, just a different type.
Yeah, I'm with you. Just one quickly for you, Jim, then. I've got a couple of questions for you, Jamie, after that. Jim, in the Italian game, and we were talking about Baresi just a minute ago, I think that defenders going back years to people like Fichetti and you can go even further back, they were all ball players. Now, it's a culture as much as anything else. What are you training in your young defenders? There's an argument that in Europe with some of the younger nations in terms of implementing technical coaching for the younger players nowadays, like the UK, like Belgium, they've taken their eye off the ball in terms of the basics when it comes to just simple defending, knowing what you need to do in terms of stopping the opposition from scoring a goal, rather than focusing on when I get the ball, I'm going to make sure that I play this ball at the back. I'm going to make sure my positioning is nice and wide so I can create space for my central midfielder. Would you say, having watched the Italian game for decades now, do you think that Italy have got it spot on for years, that they haven't tried to coach technique too much? They've just focused on getting the basics right, that they know how to defend, and letting them play out simply. The Italian defenders, the thing that they do really, really well is they play 5 or 10 yards. Their job is to give it to their central midfielders, give it to their fullback. It's not about necessarily travelling with the ball out the back. Very few players can do that. What are your thoughts on that, Jim?
Well, I think that is what they train them to do, right? So if you can't say that they're not training them, that they're training them to do their job, and their job is to hold the line, think defensively first, and then move that ball the short distance. But Italians have always thought defensive first, right? Gianni Brera said, you know, the perfect match was a 0-0 draw. So that defensive mentality has always existed in Italy. But if you look at the leaders of the English Premier League this year, you'll see a very Italian-looking back line. I mean, even though, you know, it's half German, half English, you know, these guys, they don't handle the ball. You know, they just clear the line. You know, Huth and I forget the other guy's name, but, you know, they're doing their job in a very simple way. And I think that is an important point in Leicester City winning the title in England this year, is they're not trying to play the ball out of the back with their center halves. You know, they're doing a very simple job. And I think that's important to note.
Yeah, for sure. I'd love to get your thoughts, Jamie, on Leicester's defending. Obviously, their outball is the one to Vardy or to Mahrez, or they give it short to Drinkwater to play that pass. What are your thoughts on how Leicester have defended their way to the title, Jamie?
Well, I think what Ranieri's done there, he's seen the type of defenders there is, he has, if you like. He can. Maybe they are really old-fashioned centre-backs who just want to head it and kick it. But there's nothing wrong with that. And the weird thing, I think, for any coach or any player is to start doing things. That's what frustrates me at times. I'm not saying I don't like the teams to play from the back or defend. I mean, I grew up at Liverpool. We were expected to do that. But in terms of Leicester, why would you put your defenders in that position if they weren't capable of that? And why not play to the strengths? And it got to the stage where actually, I think the last opponent, Swansea, didn't even play with a striker because people are getting so fed up with putting the ball in the box and those two heading the other way that there's no point doing that against Leicester. But the other team that you come up against now who's going for the title is Spurs. Now, they're the perfect ones for me in that I think Vertonghen and Alvarado, they're really good on the ball, but they also defend. And I think the defender comes first and they're good on the ball. I think they're the ones I really look at. I think they've just got the balance right. I think this is what Morgan and Heath have done this season. It's fantastic, but you'd have to see how it'll be next season in the Premier League and also in Europe and the Champions League. You can continue to play like that. But I think the people at the moment, the two centre-backs, I like, you've really got the right balance of those two at Spurs between defending and also being comfortable on the ball.
Okay, with that in mind then, what about someone like John Stones? He's talked about a lot, and there's no question that at 21 he's got a lot to learn in defence, and I'm sure that you'll be able to tell us even better. When you were 21, you had so much to learn about the game still. But what are your thoughts on John Stones then, and the whole argument that yes, he's good on the ball, but he's not a good enough defender?
Well, what I said before about the biggest things for me as a defender is reading the game and smelling danger, seeing things just before it happens, and I think he's got to bring that into his game. I don't think I think myself as a defender, other defenders, you're always worried. You play worried that something's going to happen. Someone's going to make a mistake. Always think the worst. I mean, I remember when I was 14 or 15, I was at the National School at Lillishaw, and a coach always said to me, when you're a defender, always think the fella next to you is a dummy. He's going to make a mistake. And the opposite way, if you're an attacker, always think you're playing with the best player in the world. He's going to put that cross in. He's going to play that screwball. And with John Stones, I just don't quite think he gets... He looks too relaxed when he's playing. He never looks... I think sometimes a defender, you see even a Godin, they're always on edge. They're always looking the scene where the danger is. I even go back to in a game where I think a lot of people said he played well in the semi-final. But even the winning goal, I'm looking at it and thinking, does he see the danger of Martial running enough there? You know, does he see it before? I think Phil Jagielka got involved in something. Now, Jagielka could have cleared it, but fortunately for Man United player, he toe-poked it through. But I think the really top defenders sense that or see that just before it happens. And that's something that I think with experience, hopefully it'll come, because he is, you know, he's our best on the ball in terms of that. But the main thing, especially for a centre-back, is the defending. As I said, I think the Spurs lads have got it perfectly, done it perfectly well this season, and defending right, but also starting attacks from the back and playing from the back. That's obviously what you need in the modern game, but I just would like to see John Stones get more of the defensive sort of sense in danger.
Yeah, for sure. Even the first goal. I mean, you've got to know, well, as a centre back, that when the ball has hit the byline, you've got to be able to attack it. And you know that a good striker, it wasn't even a striker, it was Fellaini. So you know that any decent player is going to try and make that run in front of you if it's coming on the ground. And yeah, it is anticipation. Anticipation's a big thing in the game at the moment. You know, it always has been. But when you were playing at Liverpool, and I think if people look back 30 years, Alan Hansen was the best player I'd seen at bringing the ball out the back with his feet and travelling with the ball out the back. But he was complemented perfectly well by someone like Mark Lawrenson, because he was also good in the ball. People forget that he was good in the ball. And I think it was the same with someone like Ewan Agger, for example, where Daniel Agger was excellent at travelling with the ball out the back and taking the steps out, whereas you kept it quite short. And when you had a striker that you could play to, someone like Torres that could hold it up, you would dink it into his path. Is the balance between a partnership, as much as anything else, the key thing?
Yeah, I agree. I think you always like two players to complement each other. It's not just a centre back. It could be central midfield. It could be a centre forward, two strikers. But in terms of the players that you've mentioned, in terms of Alan Hansen, starting off with him, of course he was fantastic, but he was also a great defender. And all it comes down to is your defensive record as a team. Now, Everton's defensive record is really poor, you know, so that's not in your favour. You look at Liverpool, some of the teams Hansen played in, always top of the league for, you know, clean sheets or goals against, those type of things. And that's what you want, and that's why I go back to, you know, Tottenham this season. They've got a great defensive record, but also Alvarez, you see the passes he's made for Dele Alli in terms of creating goals. So the basis for a defender is about being brave, is a perfect example. We think of him coming out with the ball. Of course, he was fantastic at that. But AC Milan, year after year, had the best defensive record in Serie A under Sacchi and Capello, and he was the main organiser. So that's the main thing. That's what I think I've done a newspaper article on John Stones. So I think the headline was, the advice was, be Baresi, not David Luiz. And the thinking in that was that for Baresi, it was still a clean sheet, it was still defending, it was still a nightmare to play against his man Mark and how aggressive he was. And then he could play up with the ball. But it's getting those fundamentals first and letting your talents come after that later, because he's so good on the ball, Johnson, it will come. You don't need to go and show people every single game. When the opportunity arises, it'll be there to show everyone what you can do.
One more thing from me, then I'm gonna shoot over to John and some of the other guys to ask you some questions. Do you think that young players that are coming through the system, I know this is quite, you'd have thought that they do, but do you think that they enjoy defending less? Because it strikes me that when you were playing, you used to love defending. You would love putting in that challenge. You would love winning, making sure that you kept a clean sheet, that it was enjoyable defending. Whereas a lot of the young players, you think that, I'm looking at them thinking, do they enjoy it? Do you love defending? So, I don't know. What do you think? Do you think that?
No, I agree. I think you're spot on. I think a lot of that is now. Listen, I think Barcelona have been a huge influence on everyone. You talk about teams who people always look back at now, and you think of, you know, Cruyff and those Ajax teams and the Dutch, you know, the total football. I think you think of even Liverpool, late 70s, early 80s. I think there's always a team from an era who sort of dominate the thinking of other teams, and people try and take it forward, and a lot of lessons are learned from those teams. There's no doubt Barcelona have been that over the last decade. And I think a lot of that comes into the influence of people and players and even young players. And also I think things like, it's not just centre-backs now. I think even the dearth of actually real out-and-out centre-forwards. I think, I feel like everyone wants to be the player who plays behind the striker, or, you know, I think even things like coloured boots and kids on computers and what they're watching on YouTube, they're always watching someone doing tricks or keeping up sort of flicks and all these different things. So you're sort of breeding those type of players, which, and let's not forget, those type of players are always normally the best player in the world at any year. It's always the number 10 normally who's there. Is the man everyone looks up to. But I just feel even in academies now, there's so many of those players wanting to play in those positions. You have people not wanting to do the the real, I wouldn't say, I don't know the word I'm looking for, but in terms of in the box, you don't know defending, be defending your box. It could be being aggressive in the opposition's box as a centre forward to go and score, I think. And Arsene Wenger has commented on that now, the sort of how hard it is to go and buy, you know, centre forward. We know what the problems he's had up there, but I think he said something about it's only really South America that's producing really outstanding centre forward. So I think it's a problem at both ends of the pitch.
Yeah, that's been my frustration with Benteke this season, is that get in the box. He's constantly outside the box trying to link up play, and it's not his game.
Exactly.
But let me jump over to Andrew. Andrew, I think you've got something for Jamie.
Yeah, Jamie, I really like the point you make about whether it's youngsters or young players coming through, enjoying the position they're playing in. It brings to mind a conversation you have with your good friend Gary Neville on Monday Night Football, when you said, nobody wants to be a Gary Neville. And my favourite part of it was that he didn't disagree. And I think it actually, apart from the personal side of it, the actual fullback position is one I'm particularly interested in. I mean, do you think, or how much of a problem do you think it is then that youngsters don't want to be a fullback or a wingback or at least a defensive player? How much of a problem do you think this is for development?
Well, I think the thing with the fullback one, I wouldn't worry too much about. The only thing I'd say is because I always think players who end up being professional footballers are normally the more often than not, the best player in the school team, best player in the local team, whatever it may be. And probably the one position you said you wouldn't want to play is probably fullback. They'd normally play down the centre of the pitch, or if they were a fantastic, quick, skillful player, they'd play wide. You'd never put your best player at fullback. But I think fullback now is probably one of the most important positions, and I think people fall into fullback. I did. Now, I wasn't that type of fullback. I was more of a fullback. I think a lot of the time you have a winger who goes to fullback, or you have a centre back who goes to fullback, and I think you see the contrast in what they give you. I mean, I done West Brom last night, and they had four centre halves in the back four. Now that's not going to obviously give you overlap, and fullbacks want to give you different things. But I think more often than not, you see fullbacks, the top ones now, they've been wingers when they've maybe joined their academies, and eventually they've gone to fullback because you know that's what they want. But initially, when I first played fullback, I've never played there before, and I went there at the age of 20, 21 for Gerard Houllier. And the thing about it I found was you have more touches than anyone on the pitch. So that's what it felt. You were continually involved in the game because you're always sort of the spare man. Someone can always, if anything's a bit tight, there's always the fullback's on. So I love playing there in terms of how many touches in the ball that you get. And I think fullback now is probably one of the most important positions on the pitch. I've seen, we're looking at Spurs as well, they're not fullback, they're like the wingers, even from the starting position. Never mind, it's not about overlapping. Now, I think you're actually seeing fullbacks actually now patrolling the whole flank on their own, because wide players don't want to stay wide, they want to be come inside, be inside forwards, or they want to be number 10s. That's what it is. So you're actually asking fullbacks now to maybe actually be good enough in 1v1s with the ball, because they've actually got a player in front of who they can overlap. So I think the way the fullback role has changed, I think, is immeasurable, really, over the probably 20, 30 years. And I think it's as important as any position on the pitch.
I mean, do you see it becoming a more popular position then? Do you imagine that happening? Does it matter?
I think it could be, because it's as much now about, well, maybe even more, in terms of going forward. And listen, that's what kids want to do. You want to be the skillful player, the best player. It's all about attacking. You said before about people not enjoying defending, but in terms of fullback role, it's a defensive role. But that now, and I go back to that, I mean, when we're judging a fullback, we judge him attacking. When you know, I'm sure people after the game, you know, we're looking at how someone's played, or a man in the pub, and we say, oh, the fullback played well. It's normally because he got forward and might have had a couple of shots, or he put some good crosses in, or he was up and down the line. It's not normally, oh, he stopped the winger playing today, and he never given a kick. You don't hear those sort of phrases, I think, when you're talking about fullbacks now. And I said that's where the game's gone. But no, I can see it becoming ever popular, the fullback position, because it is a position now where it seems it's more about the offensive side of the game, and young kids growing up and being involved in the game. That's what your dreams are at that young age, being involved at the top end of the pitch.
Yeah, I think that the rise of the inside winger has helped as well. The guy that picks the ball up on the outside and the first thought is to overload in the middle and attack that guy has allowed a quick fullback into the game, the one that can get there quicker than his winger can track him at times. That's obviously played a big part as well. John?
No, here in the States, it's I'm starting to work with the academy system here a bit, and one thing we've noticed, Jamie, is the absence of true wingers who want to get to the end line and serve. They all want to cut in, be inverted wingers, and I think a lot of that has led to the decline of a true fullback, one who's willing to maybe take a guy on one-on-one and win that battle in that sector of the pitch. Do you see that a lot, and have you seen that a lot since you stopped playing, and you see it in the academy over at Liverpool at all?
What was that? You saw the 1v1 between the winger and the fullback?
Well, we just see a decline in players willing to beat a guy in line and serve in. They all want to cut in and have a shot, or they want to cut in and be, like you said, the playmaker. Yeah. And I think a lot of that has led to the decline of a true tracking ability in the fullback, the player who is willing to force them outside and try to isolate them. They're giving them almost – it's almost a relationship where no true winger, no true fullback anymore, at least in the States. And I don't know if it's happening in England as well.
Well, I think from a defensive point of view now, as well as a fullback, you're not actually a lot of the time up against someone. There's not actually someone out there, a winger. And it's actually giving you all the defensive problems, because I think before the game, you think, okay, that's my man. When he gets the ball, I'm going to show him outside, all the basic principles now. But you think of maybe coming up against Tottenham with Lamella and Eriksen playing inside. Your decisions, you're never going to be any 1v1s. It's more your positional senses. Do I step into midfield to mark and do a hold me position? If I step in to midfield, I'm leaving space for a centre forward to run in behind in my space. If you overlap my fullback, then I'm going to go into my space from the opposition. So they're the problems now for fullbacks. It's not sort of a 1v1 anymore. It's more of an understanding the game, what else is going on around you to think, and how the players sort of penetrating into that position. That was always a problem. I think probably 10 or 15 years ago when you're playing against Arsenal, when you weren't sure, should I go inside with Perez? Is Ashley Cole going to go there? Is Thierry Henry going to sprint back space? And that was that continual movement, especially just down that one side. But I think we see that a lot now for fullbacks, and that's what sometimes I'm always looking at. Should a fullback go into midfield or should he hold his position? And it's some coaches, Roy Hodgson was always adamant, stay where you are, don't let, open a space for people to run into. But if Brendan Rodgers was, no, lock in, you go with him, we make it really simple, and the winger has to go with the fullback. But there's no sort of a definitive way, I think, how to deal with that now, a fullback defensively. I think it's how a manager sees it, and also, the player you've got in front of you, because sometimes you have a winger, he's not great defensively, and you're worried about, is he going to stay with his fullback? So they're the problems now for a fullback now. It's not that 1v1 defending as it used to be. It's more actually understanding the game.
So I'm gonna change the pace here a bit. What would you say the toughest opponent on the attacking side you had as a player? Who was that, and how did that change your view of defending?
In terms of playing fullback,
or just defending, if maybe when you were at center back too, just any of the attackers who made you change your your approach the most.
Well, everyone, listen, go back from when, the first day the game started, the pace is always the biggest thing for a defender that he doesn't like. And there's not much change with that. But in terms of centre forwards you come up against, I mean, I always found the real top players not the hardest to play against, in terms of it was a mental battle in terms of reading the game. It wasn't a physical battle, it was... the other team are going to keep possession, looking for the opening, so it's always been on your toes, being switched on. And, being aware, 1 second to switch off, it could be a goal. But the one that I didn't quite enjoy as much were listen, I'll have a physical fight with anyone on the football pitch, in terms of challenge of the ball, but it would be constant for 90 minutes and it wouldn't stop. And because you were playing for Liverpool and you were expected to beat maybe a Bolton or a Blackburn or a Fulham, whoever you're up against, you couldn't afford that one time for the striker to get the better of you. So it was a constant battle really against Bobby Zamora, Kevin Davis, these type of players, where it would be, probably 20, 30 headers through the game. You lose one flick on, you could get blamed for costing your team the game. That was the pressure you were under, but it was such a fight. And I was glad I don't have them no more.
Oh, yeah. That's kind of like another podcast, isn't it? Talking about the other end of the pitch and the decline of that sort of centre forward who used his elbows really well and put his body between the defender and the ball. I've been impressed with Divock Origi in that regard, because he's been really good at getting his defender getting his body between the defender and the ball at times and bringing it in. Jim.
Jamie. One thing I've noticed in researching your life in particular is this consistency that you talk about, and this attention to detail. And I'll give you an example. In your book, you talk about this moment in the Istanbul game where after Liverpool scored the second goal and you're down 3-2, you look up and you see that Kaká is fixing his kit in some way, and you notice that he hasn't tracked back on defense, and you write about how it's that sort of detail and that sort of attention to the small things that you sort of credit for your success in a lot of ways, and that was taught to you from a very early age. Part one is, am I reading it right? And part two is, do you see that being instilled in young players today?
Well, I think attention to detail is not just about deep defense. That could be in any role, really. And the one that you mentioned, Kikar, it wasn't something, obviously, I meant for the game. Something you look afterwards and you think, you know, these small things. Well, when I was a coach at Liverpool, I used to always say something that the small things make a big difference. And that's what it is, because at the top level there, the margins that you're talking about, that can decide games. And I think that defines sort of the best players, and especially the best coaches. It's all about the small details, really, and the tiny little thing that can make a difference. And you think of, you know, what happened in that final, Kaká fixing his shin pad. Obviously, I think the score was 3-1 then at the time before Schmeichel scores. But as a defender there, when you'd be seeing that in the game, you'd be so furious. You know, because the attacking players, it's normally those type of players who just switch off for that second. And you think of the difference that it makes. And is it something that's maybe going out the game on the defensive side? Well, yeah, I think it is, as we've mentioned earlier. It's not just the small details, I think probably the big details and the fundamentals, really, in terms of defending, and that's something that's got to come back. But the small details, I think, will always be vital at the top level of the game.
Yeah, and I guess that's really where I was headed with that. But when we talk about, you know, the small details of the game, you switch from fullback or from center half to fullback for part of your career. Which did you find more challenging, and for what reason, or did you find them both equally challenging?
Well, I mean, my best position was centre back without a doubt, so I enjoyed playing that more. So obviously, that would mean the full back role was probably more challenging. And the challenging side was the fact that I'd never really played there before, and it was starting to sort of understand the new position. But I was someone who, the reason I played football is because I had a good understanding of the game. And I played at the level I did. So whenever I changed positions, it was never something that was like a total shock to me. I always felt I had a good understanding of what was required in different positions. I would say the fullback role for me was, the challenging bit was the running side of it. Because I wasn't the greatest athlete in the world, or the quickest player, what you normally associate with fullbacks. And I was more of a defensive type of fullback who supported. But sort of doing that for 40, 50 games a season, it's not easy. And as I said, I wasn't I wasn't a bad athlete, but I wasn't sort of a super athlete that you think of Ashley Cole or Caffey, or, you know, some of the great fullbacks you could run all day, Maldini. And that was probably the challenge for me, really, because I was someone who was never injured. So I always played week in, week out. So at times you're playing 3 games a week in that role. So it was all probably the physical demands of it, really, and how best to sort of play that role to suit what I was about. Because people say, oh, you never got forward, and they're right. But I didn't have the physical capability to get up and down the line for 19 minutes, probably 3 games a week. When you're being successful and you're winning, so at times you have to sort of taper your game to suit your own needs and to obviously suit the team.
Jamie, who was the best defender you played with and why?
I think from a Liverpool point of view, I'd say Sammy Hippier. I think you saw more partnerships before. I know you mentioned Daniel Agger in terms of me being more of a defensive type and him being on the ball, but I think what suited me most with Sammy was I wasn't the biggest centre-back. In the world. I'm actually just under 6 foot, so that's not quite really what you'd expect from a centre-back now in this day and age. So it was great for me to have Sammy there, a big towering centre-back who could deal with aerial stuff and maybe deal with stuff more on the ground in terms of defending. So he's a fantastic defender for Liverpool. I think with England, it was always a toss-up, and John Terry or the old Ferdinand, they're both slightly different players. I always plugged just for John Terry, and he was a fantastic player. Probably more my type of defender than Rio was. So I think from the international scene, I'd say John Terry, and he's been the standout one in the Premier League. And I think whatever you think about him in terms of physically and, you know, being robust and things in the air, it's his actual reading of the game that I think is fantastic. And you think of how many times he cuts things out of that near post, and I think he's undervalued really for his understanding of the centre-back position rather than just his physical qualities.
Mm. Andrew?
Jamie, you mentioned the versatility where you switched from centre-back to full-back, and you know, you feel yourself as a natural centre-back. You had a clear idea of who you were as a positionally. I just wondered whether you think versatility is perhaps a bit overrated. I mean, I'm thinking of Phil Jones as an example. You know, he's been played at fullback, at centre-back, in centre midfield. And I'm wondering if it dilutes his idea of where he is, what qualities he's focusing on developing himself. Do you think it's becoming too fashionable to be too versatile and people aren't focusing on individual roles?
Yeah. Well, sorry, I just lost the name there. Who was the name that the player you mentioned?
I was thinking of Phil Jones at Manchester United.
Phil who? Phil Jones?
Phil Jones, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty, okay. I mean, if I could go through my career again and map it out perfectly how I wanted it, I mean, I played different positions similar to Phil Jones, and it wasn't really till probably 25, 26 where I just played centre-back then really for the rest of my career. But I think it's really helped me. I think it helps you as a player. I think it helps your development, versatility, understanding the game, playing different roles. But if you'd ask me would I like to have played centre-back from the age of 20 straight through my Liverpool career and not playing centre of defence, I'd have said yes. Mm. I think it would have helped me in terms of maybe playing more times for England. I think when I went to England, I was always seen, and I think Phil Jones was seen as well, as mm-hmm. we'll put him in the squad because he can play a few positions, rather than saying this is his role, this is what he's competing with X, Y, or Z for, you know, the centre. And what it did for me was playing different positions was it gave me a chance to play more games. So when you're a young player, I think it helps, but you don't want that time forever. So in a perfect world, I think maybe I'd have played centre-back a lot earlier. But what I did as a young kid, when you're trying to get on the bench, you know, for me it was Liverpool, or you're trying to come on the pitch, you're playing centre, it actually helps you get more appearances, more experience, more, you're in the, you're there for the world to see, if you like. And managers always want those type of players, and I think that's what managers want now. They always want two or three players in the squad like that. But if you want to be one of the main players in the team or one of the best players, they're not normally a versatile player. They're normally a player, okay, he played there for me. And that's 14 or 5 eventually become under Rafa Benitez. It helped me development, playing different positions, but I realised I'd love to have played centre-back my whole career.
So, I mean, would you say it's quite important how tactically astute the manager is and how aware of your character he is, like allowing you to play different positions but not letting you get bogged down too much in permanently changing around. So I mean, yeah. Would you put it down to
I don't think it helps when you're playing one position one week and something the next, and people say to me, oh, you were a versatile player and you did that when you were younger. I didn't really do that. If you look at the sort of stats. Gerard Houllier's first season, I played centre back for the whole season. And then he tried me a full back, but I'd play like right full back for the whole season. And then we'd buy a right back, and then I'd play left back for the whole season. So, and then I keep going from side to side, but it wouldn't be sort of four or five games here, two games there. I'll be, because normally versatile players, you always think when everyone's fit, the sub. No, but that was never normally the case with me with Liverpool. I always played, I'd play one position for a season, and then whatever happened, I'd go somewhere else for a season. So I never felt like it was caused me a massive problem, because I was playing every week for Liverpool. It was obviously a dream, so I was delighted to be doing that. But there was no doubt centre back in the best position. I was obviously delighted when Rafa Benitez put me back there, and I could really show I wasn't just someone who played for Liverpool every week. I was someone who could, you know, be one of the leaders of the team and one of the best centre backs out there, you know, when I was playing at my best.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, we had a whole load of followers' questions for you as well. Maybe take like the next 15 minutes and just have a chat about them, and then we'll let you crack on.
No problem.
We had a whole load of crazy ones, the same old one asking you who's the best player you played with, but we did have one asking who do you prefer more, Gary or Phil? Well, we won't make you answer that anyway. But yeah, we got one from Ewan McTeer, and I quite like this one. He asks, with the rise of fullbacks really pushing on and playing higher up the pitch, has the central midfielder now become more important to the defence, meaning the centre-backs, than the fullbacks have?
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point, and I'd agree with that, in that how many times we now we see teams, you could arguably play a back three. You know, you think of the central midfield player dropping in between the centre-backs, and that's something I think we did on there. We spoke about Tottenham doing a lot this season with Eric Dier in that position, and you're pushing the fullbacks really high. And, I mean, me and Gary had a discussion about that, I think, you know, a good few months ago on Sky, about a three at the back system. And is it that? And my argument was, is it that different now when we say a team play a back four? Because teams now, wide players are always tucking in, fullbacks are high up the pitch, the centre back drops in. Good. You can easily say a team's playing a three at the back, and I think he's spot on there. I think that centre midfield role now is, he probably couldn't, I don't even know if he could come up with a new name for it, because the position, when we say number 10 is in between the centre forward and centre midfield, it's not like the whole midfield player's in that role where he's not actually in the centre of the pitch, he's actually just patrolling like a front sweeper, if you like, now, because the fullbacks are going so hard. You need that protection, centre backs, no matter how good you are, you can't be left exposed with that much space if there's no fullback there. So you're going to need help in your midfield, and it's someone who's sort of in between the midfield and centre backs. And I think the role Eric Dier plays, the fact that he was a centre back and now playing in midfield, I think helps Spurs a lot.
Anything from anyone else, guys, on that?
Yeah, I'll jump in here. Jamie, do you notice how Javier Mascherano has settled in at centre back so comfortably? Do you think this is much of a coincidence, or was it a moment of genius of Pep Guardiola to see this in him? Or did you sense this in him at any stage of his career? Did you think maybe he could do a job because of his reading of the game?
No, to be honest, I didn't really see that. I thought at the time he could maybe play fullback. And obviously when I was playing with him, it was at Liverpool, and you're thinking, of course, he'd struggle at centre-back because of his size, really, in English football. But obviously in Spain, you can talk about a midfielder going into the back four, and automatically you think of, OK, he's going to be helping with the ball. But Mascherano wasn't. It's not like Xabi Alonso going to centre-back, and you're thinking, OK, he's going to be more like a sweeper. Mascherano was a real aggressive holding midfield player, had great defensive qualities, so he always had those defensive qualities. And I think even though you're looking at Barcelona put a midfielder to the back, you think, well, that's the Barcelona way. It's not actually Mascherano who's building the attacks from the back, really. It's still Piqué, the man, I think, who does that, and he's the one you'd see as the man who starts the attacks, brings the ball out the back. I think Mascherano was there, really, for his defending. But of course, because he's got the experience of playing in midfield, he's better than most centre-backs on the ball. But I think he's probably there for his defensive qualities more than anything else.
John, Jim, anything?
None on my end.
Okay. We got a question from Rob. This is quite a good one. Is the rising frequency of simulation and today's rules killing the art of good, strong defending in England? Jamie?
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's very difficult now. I think one challenge or one foul is a good chance you're going to end up in the book. I think defenders now have got to be very careful. And I think any challenge you make now, I think in terms of going to ground, I think you're asking for trouble. I think it was always said, stay on your feet when you sort of defend, and that was something that you brought up, young defenders. Not always easy enough to do that, but I think it's imperative in this day and age. I think as soon as you go to the ground, even if you win the ball now, you see the situation with the semi-final was a tackle by the young fullback for Man United, Ross Barkley, and people saying we got the ball first. But I think the days of getting the ball first are gone. It doesn't matter. You can talk about your follow-throughs, you know, a scissor challenge, all these things come into it now. A long time ago, as long as you got the ball first, you could basically do anything. Basically cut the position attacking player in half and you'd be okay. But I think rightly so, that's gone out the game. But I think that should encourage better defending without diving in, using your brain, staying on your feet, pushing people to certain areas. And at times you've seen, you know, what we've seen from Pochettino, what we've seen from Klopp. A lot of the time now, it's not just one player, it's two or three players around the ball, and that pressure winning the ball back as much as actually making challenges.
Jim?
To follow up on that, Gary, Jamie, we were talking about Gary and Phil.
I that name.
Gary in my head.
He was our first choice, Jamie.
We'll edit that out.
Leave it to me. To follow up on that, though, there appears to be so much inconsistency in the refereeing now as a result of, I think, you know, partly it's due to the diving and everything else, but it seems from game to game to game, there's so much inconsistency. Can you kind of comment on that and what effect that has on the defenders?
I mean, it's difficult because it's something that we've spoken about forever. I think we'll always speak about that inconsistency of referees. One referee gives it one referee. But I think like everything in life, we all see things slightly differently. And I have some sympathy with the referee. I think it's a nightmare job, really, to be honest. And I think it's not that the referees are getting worse. I think the technology is getting better at the problem. So we can highlight things that maybe referees are maybe not seeing or their eyes are they're seeing things from. And things happen so quickly. And at times, they're only human beings. And I think crowd does influence them. Maybe the teams, the referee does influence them as well. The pressure in certain games, what's at stake. So I think it's something that, even though we don't like it, we probably won't have to accept, because I don't know how it changed. I know the referees are professional now and they have meetings and they meet up and we try and get as close to a unanimous decision as possible, but I don't think it's ever going to be the case.
Do you think that we're going to see more technology then in the future? Perhaps video replay, something like that?
I mean, I always think football is behind other sports in terms of technology, and I think, you know, we're the biggest game. Why aren't we the front runners? But I think the goal line technology has been fantastic. I think what it should be done is very slowly and very sort of, what can we do next? And for me, the one I think the really big one is that wouldn't really affect the referee so much is whether something's a penalty or a free kick, because I think the referee is blown for a foul. It's his decision. He thinks it's a foul. But the game's then stopped. Mm. Right, is it inside or outside the box? That's a huge difference between having a penalty or a free kick. And I think the game stopped anyway for 30 seconds while you're putting a wall together or you're getting ready to get a penalty, whatever it may be. And if someone could just be in the ear of the referee, it was actually inside the box, that it was just outside. And I just think that'll be a good thing, because I think that's deciding games now. In terms of whether something's a penalty or a free kick, I think that's a huge decision, and I think it's very, very difficult for the referee to get that right at the speed the players are going, where the tech challenges are being made, where people fall, how far forward they fall, and I think it's a very difficult one to get right, and I think he could be helped with that.
Adam Clark has asked, obviously with the rise of young defenders like John Stones and Laporte in Spain, does it make sense to spend big money on young defenders who are still learning their craft when it's so difficult to assess their individual impact? So is it worth spending big money on young defenders that have been hyped up?
I think it is. I think with any player, there's a place you won't go beyond, but you think how long you can have a sense. I think how long Manchester United had the old Ferdinand for. And, you know, and the service he gives the club, and you think if people are talking about 30, 40 million for John Stones, there's an awful lot of money, and he is a young defender, but I think if he gets to the level where people think he can eventually get to. It'd be actually bargain, really, if you could have him for your whole sort of 10 or 12 year stint at your club. It'd end up being value for money. Of course, you've got to perform when you get there, and that's what Rio Ferdinand did when he went to Manchester United. But I think in terms of getting younger players, it just means you have them for longer. Now, of course, you've got to produce the goods, and as a young player, you've got to expect ups and downs. I think that's why it was right. John Stones stayed at Everton. I thought that was probably a little bit too young to go to Chelsea, because I know myself and my experience is a young defender, like young goalkeepers, when he makes mistakes, will cost the team points and goals, and you get fingers pointing at you, you get criticism, as he's had this season. But I think it's best he's had that criticism this season at Everton, where it's not as much on the back page, it's not as much in the forefront of people's tongues, because it's not cost them maybe Chelsea won at the Champions League or maybe a league title or the FA or whatever it may be. I think it's probably better for him to have been at Everton and maybe even another 12 months there as well, and then eventually make that move at 23-24.
John?
Jamie, I've got a follow-up for that. So do you feel that modern football has actually put too much of a, and it's a good analogy we use here in the States, it's too much of a microwave society instead of a crockpot society, where we expect too much from young players too soon, instead of letting things kind of settle and give them more time? And defense is a position where, you know, you can have a great game for 89 minutes and one mistake, and all of a sudden people think it's a terrible performance. Do you think that modern football has put too much of a microscope on these young players, and especially when you factor in the money that's spent and the potential that people put on these players, we're actually marginalizing a generation of young defenders by doing so? Or do you feel criticism is fair and balanced in your experience?
No, I agree. I agree with you. I think we do probably expect too much too young now. And also the other way, when we do well, we probably blow them up too much. And probably I may have been guilty from that. When you're in the media, you know, it's a story. Someone, you know, the new kid on the block, Dele Alli's there as well at the other end of the pitch. But I never felt really like a proper player till I was about 23, 24, physically as well. I could compete with sort of, you know, those real older professionals who've been playing, you know, the professional and the Premier League level, you know, 10 or 12 years. Before, you still feel like a kid in a man's game at times. And that's what I look at when I see John Stones. You see physically, he's still got to fill out. And it'll probably be two or three years where he physically compete. And in that time, hopefully he's gained that experience as well mentally. Obviously, technically as well, he's improved as a player. And then you're getting the finish starting with 23, 24. That's why I always feel it's right to really start really making judgments on players then and where you think they're going to go. Of course, you can still improve and get better as you get older. But I think those early years, they're all about learning years, really. And obviously, the best players like make less mistakes. Of course, they do. But no matter how good a player you are, you will make mistakes. I think it's important that we don't forget that. And as I said, for me, it wasn't until probably 2001 when we won a few trophies with Liverpool that I felt I'd really, really arrived and was a proper player really at the age of 23.
Jamie, you asked, you talk about this proper player. What would be one or two pieces of advice you would give a young footballer to really look after themselves and conduct themselves as a professional, both on and off the pitch? I think so much of what we see in the media, we see from afar, is what they do wrong, and we don't really notice what they do well. What's one thing you could instill or tell people who are in an academy setting or aspiring to be professional players to look after themselves as professionals?
Well, I think now it's as important off the pitch as on the pitch. I think whatever you think of it, you know, some people, you know, big on social media, some people don't particularly like it, but I think that's put extra scrutiny now on everyone, and especially players. And I think that the sort of off-the-field stuff, the drinking culture, I think that's gone now. You even see the situation Jack Wilshere finds himself in as a young player, that he's been rehabilitating, getting back, and one night out or whatever he's got involved in now. So I think virtually for players now, it's got to the stage, and it was just starting as maybe I was playing as well. You can't afford one mistake off the pitch. Or of course, you understand the young people, but it will get spotted, it will get seen. And I think now you've got to live your life. Basically, I mean, something Jared Hoover used to say to me, you should live for football, not use football to live. And that, I think that's right. Imperative now, especially in young players. You've got to see it and be ultra, ultra professional to get the most out of your body and what you see. And I think the way the game's going now, and it'll move on again, go in a different direction of what Jürgen Klopp expects from his players, what Pochettino expects. This is the way it's going, that way. It's not just about the skillful player, the technical player. You've got to put a shift in every single player. And even if you are a centre forward, look at Daniel Sturridge. He's not playing regular for Liverpool because I think Jürgen Klopp still doesn't feel he's putting actually enough into the game. That can be the only reason, because he's such a gifted footballer. And I think you've got to get the most out of your body physically. I think that's what people are doing now. We're getting pushed to the extreme. And I think as a young player now, the way you look after yourself off the pitch is almost as important as your training and your improving in training, because of what's required on that full pitch. So I think for any young player now coming through, it's looking after yourself now is massive, and it can have a big effect on your career.
Jamie, I've got one question for you. Obviously, there's a rise in the last sort of 10 years in high pressing, really pushing out and trying to press the ball and win it closer to the opposition's goal. But what effect has that had on the centre-backs? How has the centre-back's role changed? And has it become harder because of that? Because you've got players that are sometimes leaving their position, maybe playing higher up the pitch, and you're perhaps also forced then to play higher up the pitch. How do you think that's changed? And has it got harder because of that, defending?
Well, I think what's happened is whatever you press or whatever you do, you want your team to be compact. A lot of my teams, Gerard Fulia and Rafa Benitez, we wouldn't really push as high up as other teams. We make it very difficult for teams to try and play counter attack, especially when in Europe. But if your team's pressing high, you've got to push up behind them. And what it'll do is you'll win a lot of balls, then you probably have less defending to do. But what you will find is that the actual defending that you do may be chasing into corner flags. Because if you're pressing teams high, more often than not, you're going to play the ball long and try and turn people running behind you. So that's what you're going to have to deal with. So you may have to actually, it's similar to a case of maybe when you see Barcelona defend, when they're actually defending, a lot of times counter-attacks and long balls over the top, and maybe it's 2v2, and it looks a bit risky, but they have to deal with maybe three or four of them a game, whereas they're never under pressure, whereas we were at times, we go away in Europe, and you knew you'd be under pressure for 90 minutes, and you'd be keeping a clean sheet, maybe defending the edge of your box, but you'd be under constant pressure. It's now a different type of defender, where you may defend less, but it's probably more dangerous. 1v1s, a lot of space behind you, they're probably the differences.
So would you say pace is more important for a centre-back today than it was 15 years ago?
Well, seeing if you're playing for one of the top teams, because that's the situation you want to be in. But I'd always go back to understanding the game and reading the game being the most important. And if you've got pace allied to that, you're looking at Rio Ferdinand. That's why he was one of the best defenders out there. He read the game fantastically and he had great pace. But it's always come back to the understanding of the game and positional play and defending. I think that gives you a great head start.
Yeah, so we obviously started this podcast, and it was actually based on one of John's articles, which was called The Lost Art of Defending and how defending has changed. And so fundamentally, to kind of wrap up and to take it to the end, it's, would you say then that the standards, Jamie, of defending have gone down in the era, or that the attributes that you need, that the game has just changed, and defenders, because they, as you say, they can't show their one-on-one, a fullback can't show their one-on-one capabilities of sending a guy down the line anymore, the center back can't sit on the edge of the box and defend his box for 90 minutes away from home in Europe. Do you think that then that the standards haven't necessarily dropped, but that the game has just changed?
I think that's a great point you made. I think we're asking, as the game goes forward, we're always asking for people to stretch themselves. We want more from a centre-back. We don't want to just defend. We want to be able to play on the ball. But it all comes down to how you want to play. I mean, at the end of the day, you can say the game's changed, and I think it has done, of course. And I've said before, Barcelona are a big factor in that. But you go to the other extreme of looking at Simeone at Atletico Madrid, and you think of the role they play and what Godin does for that team. You know, that's that type of defender I'm talking about, where we defend, keep you defend the edge of your box, and we'll still call him a great defender, and they can still be successful. A minute away from winning a Champions League and a league double a couple of years ago, could win the, do the same again this season. So I think it all boils down to what your manager's sort of principles are and what he wants from his team, and everyone's different. But there's no doubt Madrid at this moment are probably an exception to the rule. And what you are asking a lot from defenders is, I think what you said, it's not so much we're not producing them, but they're asking them different things. But then is that right? If you're asking your defenders to do things that they're not capable of, and I go back to Leicester, that's been the success of their season. The fact Ranieri's not asking his defenders to do things that they can't do. I think as a manager, you can have your ideas and how you want your team to play, but it's got to be based around the players you have in your squad.
Mm. Andrew, anything else from you? Anything for Jamie?
Well, I mean, I'm pleased for the last hour, Jamie, that you've talked about the different roles within the defence. Because the one thing that occurred to me when we were preparing for this was, when you say the lost art of defending, I would guess most people's instinct would run to centre-backs. But I'm pleased that you have addressed the full-backs role too and how it's changed. Just one little thing I was going to finish with. The popularity of the centre-back role, is it likely to come back? Do you think that people will have their cult heroes, you know, the people follow Razor Ruddock, they loved his passion and fans felt like there was a connection there. Do you think there are going to be characters like, I use Razor as an example, will there be more centre-backs like him, or do you think that's it? Do you think that's the last we've seen of that breed of defender?
I think it looks like it's going off the game a bit. I think in anything in the game, something always comes back. People were telling a few years ago 4-4-2 was dead. You know, that makes it an appearance again. Three at the back's come back in the last couple of years as well. So in terms of individual players, I think you will see that. There was talk of a front two was gone in the last couple of years. That seems to have come back. I think everything comes back in football, but I do think we are going away from that sort of cult hero, the centre-back who just wins everything in the air, doesn't do nothing else, you know, whacks a few in the 90 minutes, the crowd like that, you know what I mean, that type of figure, because we are looking for different things in centre-backs, and it's okay me saying the lost art of defending, but I think we have to find that balance between getting it back. But I think it's only going one way, and it's going more towards that way than it is sort of going back to those type of figures that you mentioned, like Razor Ruddock. Mm.
Jim, anything from you?
Yeah, first I want to obviously thank you for coming on with us today, but as a pundit, what do you make of the prospects next year of having, you know, these defensive managers coming into the league like Conte and perhaps Mourinho coming back with Manchester United, if that happens, and the influence that some of these defensive-minded coaches might have on the league itself? What do you think that would do for the league next year?
Well, I'd hope to improve our performances in Europe, because I think a lot of our performances in Europe, the reason it's not being adequate enough is because defensively we haven't been good enough. And I think I go back to that when all the teams are doing really well. You know, ourselves, Manchester United, Chelsea at the time, really challenging the Champions League. A lot of it was built on, you know, our ability to go away from home, keep a clean sheet and defend properly and go somewhere and get a job. And it was, you know, just, you know, the Liverpool team, as I mentioned, the other side, you think of Cavalio and John Terry, Vidic and Ferdinand, two great partnerships at centre-back. I think a lot of it comes down to that. So even though defensively minded, you still maybe need top defenders. I'm looking at Conte coming in, will he bring some of the Juventus defenders, because they're as good as anyone at the moment.
John, anything from you?
No, I just want to thank Jamie for coming on. I think it's been, I've learned a lot, and he's a, grew up watching him play and kind of a footballing idol for me, so it's been fun.
Yeah, great.
Okay, thanks, John.
Yeah.
So, yeah, thanks. Thanks to Jim for joining us, John for joining us, Andrew, and of course, Jamie. Do check out Jamie's foundation, the jamiecarragher23.co.uk. They're doing some great work around. And be sure to check out Jamie on Twitter at carragher23. You'll find the podcast on thefootballtimes.co. It'll be on SoundCloud and iTunes as well. So thanks very much for listening, everyone. Until next time, take care.